pessoal. Hello, 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 everyone. Happy Talk About It Thursday. It is April Halliburton here. I hope your day is going well. Things are going well for you. You're wearing your mask, staying safe, practicing social safe distancing. We are here on Talk About It Thursday on the air with Offer HR Biz. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I am April Halliburton, founder and president of Offer HR and Business Solutions. For those that don't know who I am, we are a virtual human resource business partner, managing and consulting with companies 2 to 49 employees throughout the country. Been in business a little over 10 years. Our mantra, folks, business can be like a circus. Don't let HR be the elephant in the room. So if you haven't had a chance, folks, go on over to Twitter and follow us, All for HR. We're on Instagram, All for HR, Facebook, All for HR and Business Solutions. And be sure to join us on our in our free our Facebook group, Small Business HR Success Hub. Small businesses are, you get great info. Talk to other small business owners. We have a great time in there. Be sure to join us on for coffee Tuesdays and Wednesdays mornings, 9 to 9:30. Facebook Live is Tuesday at 7 p.m. Don't forget Freedom Friday. Submit your Freedom Friday HR question, folks. If your question is selected, guess what? You get a free gift. How cool is that? So we are here. We have our guest for today's show, Professor Lee Metals. He is joining us on the show. So excited to have him joining us. Absolutely, absolutely. Professor Metals is a professor at Wash College. He has also been a HR consultant for over 30 years. He converses and talks about HR issues. He presents and has a very extensive background in HR. Professor Metals is also the president of the Michigan chapter of the National Association of African Americans in Human Resources, as well as co-founder and co-leader of the Wash College Annual HR Summit and HR Analytics Conference. Very, very impressive background. In addition to all of those wonderful things, he's a published author of Take the Lull of the by the Horns and Closing Leadership Gap. Again, take the lull by the horns, closing the leadership gap. Lee, welcome, welcome, welcome to the show.
April, it's an absolute delight to be here. And as you, I don't know if you know, but I've been following you for a couple of years too. So you can either it's either stalking, trolling, or admiration. But I mean, I love what you do. I love your show. And while COVID has kept us from meeting physically, I look forward to the opportunity to sit down and have coffee with you. So thank you for inviting me.
Oh, no, the pleasure is indeed ours. We are so glad that you are sitting with us today and chatting with us. Again, a very, very, very important impressive background and 30 years experience, a published author. And so again, kudos to all of the fantastic things that you are doing in the HR realm.
Thank you very much.
You are so welcome. So let's get started. We're talking today on HR, Catalyst to Change. So tell me what you think. Let's see. Tell me a little bit about how you believe HR has changed.
Well, again, I always like to say that I've been in this profession long enough to I've actually stood next to Abraham Lincoln when he was given the Emancipation Proclamation, and when he looked over and said, "What do we do about this?" I said, "Let's start personnel." So it's been a fun journey. But you know what? I think some of the things that have happened with HR has really been how the nature of the profession has changed from being this kind of afterthought, this kind of afterthought function in which you place people because you didn't know what else to do with them, to this more formalized professional function that serves a very specific purpose within the organization, but that purpose tends to expand or contract depending on what's going on in the outside world. Mm-hmm. And so part of that transition has been individuals becoming more professionalized around it, so that you see a higher number of individuals who have both undergraduate and graduate degrees in the profession. The number of colleges and universities that have actually identified that as a profession, the ways kind of expanded over the years from being a pretty diverse profession, although it does tend to be somewhat female dominated. But you know, if you go to a particular conference, you look around the room, there's a lot of diversity within it, and I think a lot of that diversity is representative of just how this. I think we have one of the most interesting professions that just expands and contracts depending on what's going on in the economy. And one of the things that I think HR professionals have had to learn to do over the years is to be flexible with that change.
Right.
Because, you know, and what are we sitting in, what are we sitting in the middle of right now? An unexpected change that nobody saw coming. Mm-hmm. And as soon as it hits organizations, the very first function that has to respond to it is the human resources function.
Yes.
All right, because there's, you know, you got to figure out what are you gonna be doing with your people. You know how are these particular changes are gonna happen. So, I think for us as a profession, individuals within the profession, we have learned how to be flexible and how to embrace change. Because oftentimes it comes completely out of left field. And, you know, and one of the things that I've had a good time talking with my HR colleagues about over the years is how we learn to move from having a reactive mindset to much more of a proactive, anticipatory mindset. And that's a real shift for us, because over the years, and I'm sure you saw it as you were starting the profession, we're just always reacting to things. React, 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 react. You know, like we were in a pinball machine somewhere. Well, but now, given how, you know, universities have been training us, how folks like you and others have been, you know, mentoring others in the profession, we have much more of an anticipatory mindset, even though there's still a reactive piece, because again, who saw COVID coming? So I think that's just some of the stuff that, you know, 30 years encapsulated into a single statement. That's what stands out for me.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And I certainly agree with you, Lee. I remember years, HR at one point for a long time is actually just been considered as paper pushers. And that is, nothing is further from the truth. Now, again, thanks to the universities that we have, the universities and the things that we're being taught, you know, we're able to prepare and put plans in place. Although there was no plan for something such as this pandemic, it still helped immensely the training and the education and the expertise that individuals like yourself and myself and other HR professionals have, you know, just had along, that's grown, that's expanded, which really, you know, enabled us during this time to pick up the ball and get running with it. Because, you know, because HR, as you said, we have to not be so quick to respond, but, you know, use the preparedness that we have, the expertise, the education that we have to protect our employees, customers, and continue to move forward as best that we can, especially in times such as this.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head, and that's in many ways, that's kind of the underlying premise of this whole notion of catalyst for change. Because when change happens externally and it impacts the inside of an organization, and you have a lot of managers and directors who are running around trying to do stuff, mm-hmm. but at the core of all that is human resources trying to respond to all the people issues that emerge. Mm-hmm. You know, when the organization says, this is what we have to do, or HR says, okay, but this is how it's going to impact our people. And so mm-hmm. we need to have programs and policies and resources in place to accommodate that in such a way that the organization can still maintain its function. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're not addressing people needs in that moment, you know, it could lead to all kinds of change. And the real beauty about being in human resources and being a catalyst for change is that human resources, we have access to all the behavioral stuff across functions, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't matter if an employee is acting out in accounting. It doesn't matter if an employee has daycare needs in finance. It doesn't matter. All that behavior rolls itself up to in the human resources. Mm-hmm. And we have a bird's eye view of all the things that are happening across functions. And so in becoming a catalyst for change, we can do that because we already have the insights about the behavioral stuff that are going on across the organization, because that stuff always in the back of our desk.
Absolutely. I like that. That analogy, the bird's eye view across all of the functions. Because again, thinking back to when HR was considered as just personnel, the personnel department, I remember it being referred to as the personnel department. Yeah. And as times change, as education change, expertise, and just things just constantly, again, changing, having to adapt. We as HR professionals, again, had to be able to deal with all functions of the organization. So your HR is linked to every aspect of your business. That's why I always call HR is the heart. Your people, you know, they're your people. They're the heart of your organization. It's not, you know, the product or the service that you serve, that you have or you offer absolutely is important, but you have to remember that without the people, it's just not possible.
No, it isn't. You know, and I guess, and to underscore a particular point, one of the things that I have enjoyed watching over the years with our profession is that it's no longer a place, it's no longer a dumping ground for individuals who couldn't perform, you know, who couldn't manage out in another kind of function. And so, you know, one of the neat things about that whole process is that because, you know, the nature of the workforce has changed so dramatically, mm-hmm. that no one person who hasn't been thinking about this initiative can just fall into it and do it. Mm-hmm. Now, you and I were laughing earlier about how a lot of us kind of, you know, how we weren't looking for this, it kind of found us. And I think then that's an interesting pattern within the human resource profession now, because I know more folks who the conversation said, well, I wasn't looking for this, but when I fell into it or it found me, not when I was dumped into it, but when I fell into it or when I found it, I went, oh, this makes perfect sense. So they had, you know, they already had that passion. Mm-hmm. It just needed to be focused in the area that made a lot of sense. And so, you know, it's not unusual to run into folks who have a particular story like that, or who were saying, I didn't even major in this in college. I was majoring in chemistry, or I was majoring in liberal arts. And all of a sudden I kind of found this. And next thing I know, it's 25 years later and I'm just loving this profession.
Exactly.
Well, you know, those are the kind of things that have really helped change the profession over the years. And I'm so grateful to see that.
Thank you. Absolutely, HR, we have that passion for people, that passion to help, and that passion to build. And it's something that when you have it, we oftentimes find ourselves in challenging situations, and but we are always, again, we always have that passion and that heart. Like I said, during this time, and as you said, during this time, it's just a greater revelation for how HR has just taken the lull by the horns.
Yeah, there you go.
And went
absolutely.
And went and just moved forward, you know, and it wasn't easy, and it still isn't easy, because we're still, you know, still filling positions and helping those that are helping those organizations that are struggling during this time, repositioning themselves, which is, you know, maybe building your workforce, maybe cutting your workforce, maybe changing your workforce so they're staying at home or working from home more, or whatever the scenario is.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, and what we keep finding out, and that's probably what keeps us, what keeps both of us, you know, young, vibrant in this profession and drinking a lot, is the fact that there's always, you know, just when you think you got it nailed down, another issue emerges that nobody saw coming.
Yeah.
All right. And so, and because the nature of the workforce, I'm glad you brought this up. The nature of the workforce has changed so dramatically in the last 30 or 40 years.
Yes.
That, you know, there's, you know, no one individual who just kind of, you know, fell in, you know, walks into it or gets dumped into it can figure it out. The nature of the workforce is such that it demanded, it absolutely demanded that we be trained and proficient in understanding what this workforce is all about. Now, when we talk about demographics, and I won't continue to ramble. When we talk about demographics, and people talk about, well, this, you know, this whole demographic shift, I said, well, one of the things you need to know, this thing was predicted back in the 1980s. The Hudson Institute did a report for the federal government in which it was trying to identify where their issues were going to be as federal employees started to retire. Mm-hmm. And they pointed out back in the 80s that the demographics were going to change, and that the issues were going to change because of that. It was an inevitable flow of things that were going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so many places denied that reality that by the time the thing really hit, they were starting to react to the fact that, one, the workforce was global, the workforce had more women, the workforce had more people of color, the workforce had more folks who were physically challenged, the workforce had more individuals who were international. And it's like all of a sudden this hodgepodge of folks showed up in the workplace, and people looked around and said, what the?
Right.
How are we supposed to deal with this? Da-da-da-da, call HR.
Let's get HR on the line, absolutely.
Yeah. So HR, tell us what's going on, and we did. Now, what are we supposed to do about it? Here's what you got to do. So, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, whether we like it or not, we're always going to be in the core. Now, whether we get treated with the kind of value that we represent is a different issue, but it doesn't matter because we are always going to be in the core of this stuff.
Absolutely. I like the fact that you said whether we're going to be treated.
Yeah.
Well, to our value, because that's right. That's a story of a whole different nature.
Oh, we could do a 3-hour radio talk on that by itself. You bring the wine, I'll bring the bourbon.
But suffice it to say, people that are in HR have that passion, that love, that is a lot of times has to be enough.
Yeah.
You know, it really does, because regardless to what happens, what scenario, what pandemic, you know, we're on the phones, we're in late at night hours, we're putting things together, we're effectuating strategies, and we're saving our companies. Whether it's we're valued or not, we still keep going because it's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's what we do. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I can honestly say that is my passion, is helping small businesses and in an HR perspective, because I love people. And I feel like, again, your HR is the heart of your organization. And if you're not being good to your employees, you're not investing, you're not encouraging, you're not, you know, building your culture, it's just it can be detrimental to your organization.
Well, yeah, and let me say this to your small business listeners, who think that because they run a small business, managing the day-to-day operations, that they actually understand human resources. I'm going to say to all of you, stop it. Stop it right now, because you're just setting yourself up for lawsuits to follow. Now you call April, you go hire an HR intern, if that's what it takes. You go find you go find someone with 2 or 3 years experience, and you bring them in, because even if they have to be a one person operation in a small business, that's much, much better than the CEO or in a family business, or the CEO's daughter in the family business, or somebody like that, thinking that they both know and understand the nature and function of human resources. April, I've watched it happen over the years. Just keep setting themselves up for lawsuits. So stop it. run your business, but get your HR consultation, either internally or externally, because the people issues cannot be managed as part of the overall operations for you to really understand what's going on.
Absolutely.
So, small business owners out there, stop it. Stop it right now, because all you're doing is setting yourself for a lawsuit. And then when you call April to come in, she's just cleaning up a legal mess that you've created. Mm-hmm. When all you had to do was accept the fact that human resources is a function that requires a special kind of training, knowledge, and thinking.
I'm
coming down off my soapbox.
It's okay.
April, I love small business owners. I've done work with small business owners. Mm-hmm. I admire what they do, whether it's, you know, creating a chia pet or, you know, a dog leash that glows in the dark. I just think that stuff is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that small business owners are the major employer around the country. I'm glad for all that. All I'm asking you all to do is to stop thinking that you could also do human resources by yourself, because you can't. I want your business to grow, and human resources can help your business grow.
Absolutely. Right. You have to have that HR foundation. You have to know how to grow your people, how to grow it, because your business is not, again, the service or the product that you offer is phenomenal. But you have to have that team, and you have to know how to grow that team. You have to know, have the knowledge, the expertise. Again, look at where we are now, and it's ever changing in this industry. Like every 5 to 10, we have these huge trends that come about, and we go, "What the?" How did that happen? And these trends are coming, and they come so quickly, you know, and so you have to be able to adapt. Your company, your employees have to be able to adapt to that change.
Yeah.
You know, one trend I'm going to tell you that really knocks me off my feet, and it's really small, I think. Using text messaging as a recruiting strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Who does it?
If you don't, you won't get the people that you need.
Yeah.
You know, I was having a conversation with my daughter a couple, I think during the latter part of the year, last year, and she was looking for, had been contacted, regarding a position. She said, "Wow, Mom, She said, they contacted me. They interviewed me, a quick interview, and negotiated over 2 to 3 weeks, all through text messages.
All through text, yeah.
And I was, she said, I don't think I'm comfortable with that. She said, I don't think I'm comfortable with that, Mom.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can see why.
Yeah.
Because I think there's something about the visual connection that's important, yes, that you can't make with a text. You know,
yes.
I mean, I'm glad she got a job offer that speaks highly of her and that speaks highly of you.
Right.
You know, but, you know, for me, I got to be able to look somebody in the eye because I got to see if they're crazy or not. I'm trying, you know, I appreciate what you're giving me on the surface, but I need to see what's behind it.
And I'm glad you said that, Lee. I am so glad that you said it because I didn't want to say, yeah, I'm kind of needing to see if this person is crazy or not. You know, it's just, it's, you know, you don't have the chance to connect. And it's so then are you finding yourself trying to start that connection during the onboarding process, you know, as opposed to you getting a feel for this company and vice versa during the interview, the first and or second and or third interview? It's just, I don't know. But
that's both sides of the coin, April.
Mm-hmm.
Not just necessarily from a candidate point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But as an employer, you want to find out that this person has some issues, and you can't do it over text. Because I can text my sanity very easy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I can text that very easily.
Right.
To put in a cubicle next to somebody else, and then it turns out I got issues. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand that's the modern way of making stuff happen, and I'm not anti against it. I just think that there's some caution that need to be thrown around that too.
I agree. That's one of the trends that quickly comes to mind. That is the texting, because I just never. Yeah, I don't know. I just yeah, but I mean, I have used it for recruiting. I don't know. I think there is, again, you miss making that initial connection. And so it's just, yeah, it's one of those trends that when people started doing the texting and during, you know, texting interviews and this, I said, wow. But again, you have to be able to adapt to change. You have to, you know, in the HR industry, you have to, and the trends come and go really quickly. Although a lot of trends, they stay, and I like that.
Yeah, well, and that's part of, you're right, that's part of the adaption process. Because if someone is on the organizational end, texting a potential candidate who's responding to the organization, odds are pretty good. They've shared a similar growing up experience in which, you know, texting is how things happen. So that's what they know. And I get that. So what happens is folks like you and I have to make them aware of the fact that there are other ways of communicating besides text.
Right.
And not to solely rely on that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell me, really, you know what I want to know is about the book, your book, Taking the Lull by the Hands.
Yeah. I'll just give you a brief scenario. One of the things that consistently popped up in my consulting work, and perhaps the things I observed when I was working, is that oftentimes, you know from research that when people leave organizations, they don't leave organizations, they leave bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that trend to be true in so many different ways. And one of the things I started to look at was, why are some of the reasons that they're leaving? And so I started conducting my own interviews, doing some reflective research and all that. Mm-hmm. And while there's like two or three reasons that always stand out, one of them that consistently showed up in my research was I didn't feel like I was being appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And once I started hearing that theme I went, I think what's going on is managers are missing the opportunity to develop their people so that they can continue to stay with the organization and build on opportunities. And so I call that gap a lull. It's a lull in conversations between an employee and a manager. And when managers aren't looking at and thinking about that conversational loyal, mm-hmm. I mean, that conversational lull, the employee is already thinking about it. Mm-hmm. So much so that by the time if they spend too much time thinking about it, they leave. and by the time they leave, the manager is left with this notion of, well, what happened? Well, what happened is what you weren't paying attention to the individual needs. And so the book is a fable mm-hmm. Based on some very real life stuff where this one individual, Sam, gets an opportunity to relive a day in which he blew several opportunities to decrease the lull conversation between he and an employee. And so this guy takes him back through his day and allows him to see those scenarios where he could have had a chance to do something and didn't. And consequently, he lost a lot of good talent because of that. So it's a nice short, fantasy non-intrusive read mm-hmm. that my hope is that a lot of the messages are kind of underlying in the story. So it was a fun book to write, and when people get their hands on it, I hope they enjoy it, because it's, like I say, it's a nice short fable that's couched in organizational reality.
And so I've ordered the book as well. It reminds me, excuse me, of in undergrad, grad school, for my capstone, I did a research piece on servant leadership.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And the concept, the book is by Robert Greenleaf, I think the name is.
Robert Greenleaf.
Yeah. And so it's something that I've always taken with me. I still have the book right here. But it touches so much on what you said about managers, and people leave. In most cases, people don't leave jobs, they leave managers. Yeah. And so it's so important at organizations that as leaders, first of all, lead by example. Exactly. And you have to be able to invest in your employees, invest the time. And the first thing, especially when it comes to small business, they go, I don't have the money to invest in my employees. Well, it's not always about a monetary value.
Exactly.
It really is not all about, absolutely not about monetary value at all. It's about appreciation. It's about knowledge. It's about expertise. It's about sharing the things and building. People are always going to, when you lead by example, you'd be surprised at the individuals that are actually watching.
Exactly. Well, and say you hit it. Now that hits it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When you step into any kind of supervisor, managerial role, you are being observed all the time mm-hmm. by your employees. And if they take cues from what you do and what mm-hmm. you don't do. Mm-hmm. And, as someone who's worked as a manager, as supervisor, director, I've had a chance to be in all those roles. And I've, mm-hmm. I've made my share of mistakes in terms of working with individuals. But for anybody who's in that role, April, I think if they go with the premise of my role is to get work done through my people. Mm-hmm. So, once they recognize that, then, Greenleaf's servant leadership is applicable. Seven Habits of Effective Leaders, that becomes applicable because that you are the catalyst for getting things done through your people in terms of addressing their individual needs as employees trying mm-hmm. to get the work done. If you're going with that premise, it's less stressful. It's much more encompassing of what managers are supposed to be doing. And I got to say, from a human resources standpoint, it makes our job easier because we aren't constantly trying to fill positions that vacate because you didn't understand that premise.
And it's not a difficult premise to understand, because it's very simple. It really is. Adages such as "do unto others as you have them do unto you," lead by example. Give respect. You get the respect that you give. These are things that are simple concepts that are significant to you growing your employees and growing your workforce within or your culture. These are things that your employees are looking at when you are leading. These are simple things that they see. And like you said, they are watching your cues. They're looking at your behavior. They're looking at how you are treating others. So, when you have these instances where you have toxic work environments and you have no clue, a lot of times it's directly reflective of management.
Exactly.
All the time, but a lot of times it's reflective of management.
9% of it. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be in a managerial role, you have to accept that. If there's a toxic environment going on, and 90% of the time you're contributing to it, mm-hmm. Especially if you're not addressing it.
Exactly.
Right? And one of the complaints I've heard over the years is, managers say, people bring their drama to work. They've always brought their drama to work. where else is it going to be acted out? Of course they bring their drama to work. It doesn't mean that their drama can't be managed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so when we really start to get into a lot of it, it's just like, you all just need to understand that, as a human resources person looking at folks in leadership roles, one of the things that I always end a lot of my leadership training, mm-hmm. whether it's 2 hours or 4 hours or 4 days, I always end it with this statement, and that is, the only way to make a difference is to be the difference. And so you have to decide, if you're going to be in that role, what's the difference that you want to be for the people who report to you. And I live by that, and I fall on that sword all the time.
That's very, very powerful. If you're going to make a difference, you have to be the difference. And how do you do that? You have to be able to do that. You have to be able to identify what differences you can make in your organization, in the lives of your employees. You have to, that's so powerful. So powerful. So Lee, I thank you. I've learned so much. Talking with you, I've enjoyed talking with you. And so I can't tell you how I'm honored and happy that we are, that you joined us on the show.
I'm glad to be connected with you, April. I really am.
We've got to get together and do coffee soon. And again, it has indeed been an honor. I just want you to do me one more favor.
Sure.
I want you to leave our audience with one thought.
With one thought?
Yes, please.
Oh, sure. Just because COVID has us isolated and alienated, it doesn't mean we can't stay connected. And it's through that connection that we maintain our humanity.
Nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Folks, we are so honored. Mr. Lee Meadows for joining us. It was indeed a pleasure. I look forward to having him on the show again. And we are, again, if you haven't had a chance to, follow us at All for A on Twitter and All for HR. We are on Instagram, All for HR, LinkedIn, All for HR and Business Solutions, Facebook, All for HR and Business Solutions. Don't forget, come on over and join our the Facebook group, which is Small Business HR Success Hub. We are growing and we'd love to have you. Don't forget about coffee Tuesdays and Wednesdays, 9 a.m., 9 to 9:30. That is on the Facebook page. Top Talent Tuesdays, 7 p.m., Facebook Live. And my favorite, right? Freedom Friday, So go ahead and submit your question to Freedom Friday HR question at allforhr.net. We select your question, you win a free gift. How cool is that? Again, it's indeed been a pleasure. Thank you, Lee, for joining us. I look forward to, again, having you on the show again. I appreciate you. Folks, we are signing off on our Talk About It Thursday. Be sure to go on over and see the calendar on at allforhr.net. We have some great webinars coming up. Thank you again for joining us on the show. Folks, don't forget, business can be like a circus. Don't let HR be the elephant in the room. Until next week, stay safe and be kind.